Blog Talk Radio.
Your host, Merle Exit. Well, it's 3 p.m. here in New York City. It's a cool, chilly day, and it's kind of just overcast springtime, I guess. Well, it's at least, I think it's about maybe around 60 degrees. That's not so bad. And we're going to be into music today, and I usually introduce the people that are my guests, but for the introduction right now, what I'm going to do is have you hear a song, well, a number. Enjoy. Well, the song is entitled Cry of a Butterfly, and it is composed by Paul Joseph, who we now have on the air. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Merle. How you doing?
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me about, huh? And we have, who do we have with us?
Maestro Dongyoung Kim. Is he on the line?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yes, he is.
Yes,
hi, Dongyoung. How you doing?
How are you?
Good.
Well, let's talk about this piece. You composed this piece, Cry of a Butterfly?
Yes, I did. And as a matter of fact, it's going to be performed by Maestro Kim and the Queensborough Symphony Orchestra on May 28th, 7 p.m., Mary's Nativity Church on Flushing, and your listeners can see it on your blog, all the information. And that recording you actually heard actually is the maestro conducting it. It was actually an orchestra he founded years ago called the Queen's Philharmonia that recorded this in 2003. And so that was his conducting, so you're going to hear that piece on this concert, as well as some other great things. As we spoke earlier about, it's the debut of the Queensborough Symphonic Choir, and they're going to be doing Bruckner's Te Deum, a glorious piece. And it's going to be a great event. We hope people can come out to that. They'll also get to hear Paul Joseph Cry of a Butterfly and First Tears of Spring, and they'll get to hear the Scottish Fantasy by Max Bruch, performed by one of our virtuoso violinists in the orchestra, Kay Nagano. And the orchestra is the Queensborough Symphony Orchestra, and they're a great new group, and Dong Young can even tell you more about them and about the origin of the choir. They're 3 years old, and I'm honored to be working with this group. It's a great organization, and that's about that.
So the Queensborough Symphony Orchestra has been around for 3 years, as you said?
Yes, Dong Young, we started in 2015, correct?
Yeah, it's 2015, March 22nd. That was the first day of the concert.
Okay.
So, of course, I don't want people to get this. There's also the Queen's Symphony Orchestra, right?
Right. It's a source of confusion.
Yeah,
but it's the Queensborough Symphony Orchestra.
Okay. Just so we don't have any confusion. How did this get formed?
The orchestra?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's go first with the orchestra, and then we'll talk about the choir after.
Yeah, actually, the bunch of musicians, they don't have a concert, or they don't have a rehearsal on Sunday evening, so I just asked them, could you just come down and then just make some music? And that's how we started. So we just rehearse on every Sunday, and the concert is on Sunday, and then it's been already 3 years.
So, in other words, and who decides on the music?
I do.
Okay, so you're choosing, and they're all classical pieces?
Yes, we do classical pieces, and we do a lot of world premiere. We are working with the living composers, and then we are actually planning a lot of jazz, classical combinations. Actually, we have done before, Paul, right?
Yes.
So. Oh, okay. And so, and the pieces that you use, are they usually compositions that, that someone has already composed? Or how often do you do ones that you compose?
First of all, I don't compose. And then,
no, I mean, that are composed.
I mean the original composers.
Hello.
Sorry?
Yes, sometimes we ask composers and then to just commission the piece. Or sometimes we find out the piece which was composed before, but never had a chance to be performed.
Okay. So. Do you find, let's say, any of the members submitting their own compositions?
Sometimes we do. Because one of our bass player, Yuta, he is finishing his first orchestra piece, and then we are planning to do the world premiere in the end of second half of the year.
Oh, okay.
And we had a performance recently of another orchestra member, Sharon Cha, a very talented cellist, and she wrote a beautiful piece called The Last Waltz, and they performed that, was that about 6 months ago, Dong Young?
No, that was exactly 1 year ago.
1 year ago, okay.
Yeah, already.
So now, how did the choir come about?
Yes, we did our first New Year's Eve concert last year. That was December 29th. 2016, and then I just put the repertoire of the Beethoven's Choral Fantasy. It's very short piece and the choir sings just 5 minutes. So I just organized choir for 22 pieces, and then after the concert, they decide to stay. So from the beginning of February this year, they start to rehearse, and then we chose Bruckner's Te Deum. So that's how we have choir.
Yes, Merle. They decided to stay. They wouldn't go home. They just stayed there. They wouldn't go home. So our food bill is like enormous by now. You couldn't imagine. But anyway.
So now you're conducting both the choir and the orchestra at the same time, I guess, right?
Not true. Actually, I rehearse the orchestra, and then we have a choir director who has a lot of knowledge of vocal singing. So I just let him train the choir, rehearse the choir. For the concert, I'll be conducting.
Okay, and what is the name of the choir director?
His name is Jinsu Lee.
Okay, just give him some publicity.
He deserves it.
Sure.
Okay. So the choir, in other words, like you put out some notice saying we're going to have a choir, and then people just because they like to sing.
Yes.
Decided to be part of it.
Yes, it's not like most of the members are not professionals. They just love to sing with other people.
Would you like to join, Merle?
Do I like to sing?
Would you like to join?
Oh, I love to.
We have rehearsal tonight.
No.
Come on down,
Merle. No, not tonight. I'm. By the way, I had been a professional singer, but just. But I don't know if that I'm ready to join a choir. Did people audition when they for the choir, or do you just take people who sing and you mold their and their voices get molded?
Actually, we just accept whoever wants to sing with us, and then we just teach them in the rehearsals how to, you know, the dictions and then voice and then everything. Because we have, like, vocal trainers. Besides the choir director, we have 2-3 vocal trainers for the professional singers. They just teach the choir members the singing.
Yeah. I was just getting a flashback to actually being in glee club in the sixth grade. And they taught us diction in terms of when you're singing, which is completely different from when I'm having a conversation.
We do think you have great diction. It's don't worry about it.
Oh no,
your diction is impeccable.
Well, we tend to say, because of New York accent. We tend to say, like, M-A-N, we won't say man, most of us. We'll say man.
It's okay, we're going to sing in Latin. So.
But in singing, I could never say man. I would always have to sing man, because it was drilled of the exact dictions of words.
Yes,
so that's why I'm commenting on, you know, avoiding an accent when you're singing, I guess.
Well, Maestro just said that they're going to be singing in Latin, so we could avoid the man issue altogether.
Look, it's okay. No one is perfect.
So they're singing in Latin. No, okay. Well, let's see.
Singing in Latin
New
York accent, fine.
Well, I did learn a Deste Fidelis in the sixth grade. But let's get back to this.
You could sing with our church choir. We could sing Come All Ye Faithful. It would be wonderful.
No, I'm saying that I learned it in Latin.
Right.
Okay, so that's all right.
Okay.
But But I want to get back to this. In terms of just the symphony orchestra, how many members do you have?
Well, we have about 53 members for the orchestra.
And when you're saying 53 members, is that necessarily 53 instrumentalists at the time?
It depends what kind of music we perform. Sometimes we don't need all 53 members. Sometimes we need more than that. So it depends.
Sometimes you need even more, you're saying?
Yeah, more than that. Because we did Mahler Symphony last year. Then definitely we need more than 52.
What do you think that it depends? You think it's the string section that is more, that seems to need more at times, or
mostly
what section?
Strings, but sometimes you know, mostly strings, but sometimes like Mahler, we have to have huge brass and wind section too.
Do you have both an oboist and someone that's playing the English horn?
Actually, the oboe is the biggest problem. We never had oboe player. We have. I have as concert by concert. Do you know any oboe players?
Do you play, Merle? Do you play oboe?
I did for 3 years.
Really?
You were in the glee club. You're always welcome to both chorus and then for the orchestra.
That's very
Where
funny.
Where do you live?
I didn't play well, but I played. That was the instrument I played.
It's okay.
I took up the oboe actually because I liked the sound of it.
And?
That's the only reason
really
I took up. Yes, it's hard to play, but actually the instrument I like the sound of the most is the English horn. I like that, just that it's just a little bit, it's like an alto oboe, I guess.
It's deeper, more romantic, it's sexier. A matter of fact, in the Baroque period, they had an instrument called the oboe d'amour, oboe of love, and it was basically the range of an English horn, and it was that low, deep, sexy, romantic sound.
The bassoon is too low.
Yeah, that's right, it's low.
I hope our bassoonist isn't listening to this. I hope our bassoon players aren't listening to this radio program. But anyway.
I like the bassoon, but it's an excellent piece of. It's an excellent instrument that enhances a lot of music.
Yes.
It really does. Most of the time, I can hear a piece and I can pick out the instruments being played. Tell me about the composition of Cry of a Butterfly.
Actually, maybe Don Young should tell you about it because it seems to be his favorite composition of mine. It's a very short composition, and it's only a few minutes long, as you heard, because you did play it at the beginning. And it's one of the pieces, I think... It epitomizes a lot of aspects of my style because it combines aspects of nature and emotions. And that's even stated in the title, Cry of a Butterfly. The cry is an emotional concept, and the butterfly symbolizes nature, so it really blends the two. And the two are very interrelated. You could even say, in a metaphysical sense, that they are actually one. The other piece also complements it very well. They're often played as a pair because First Tears of Spring also has the emotion and nature concept in it. So that's great pieces to play, and it's still spring, so it's not too late to hear them. So, and maybe Don Young wants to add something because he seems to like those pieces.
Yeah, that's your masterpiece, actually. So it's like a symphonic emotion naturale, right?
Right. Yes, exactly.
Well, how about we play the song?
Okay.
Okay.
First Tears of Spring? You mean First Tears of Spring?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I did hear the French horn, didn't I?
Yes,
I did.
You did. And you also heard an oboe in the middle section. That,
yes,
that,
I was
section, that was dedicated to you, Merle, that oboe section in the middle.
I was going to say, I thought I heard an oboe in there.
Yes, you heard the French horn near the beginning in the first section, and then later on
you heard
the oboe.
Yeah, but the French horn was out of tune.
It
was out of tune.
It was close enough.
No. Out of tune is out of tune.
Dong Young has such a great ear. It's amazing. He can find, like, the most, if it's a fraction off, he could tell.
No, I still remember it. It was like 14 years ago.
And also there was something's beeping like a phone sound in there, and I don't remember putting that in the orchestration, but maybe I did. It seemed to come at like the right time.
No, I don't think so. I think what happened is it kind of might have been from a noise that from you guys, and what I did is, just in case, I muted both of you so we could hear the whole thing.
It was a nice touch.
But
however it happened,
end,
I think it improved the orchestration.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. But at the end of the show, I'll play it again, and we'll see.
Okay.
So let me first say, okay, so let me ask each of you, starting Paul, how did you get into music and, you know, what's your whole background, et cetera, that got you into the, you know, prior to this symphony orchestra?
Well, I put it simply.
Are you a Queensite, by the way? All the way, or?
Well, I would say half away, a good half of the way. And the reason I say that is because I don't live in Queens, but I've been in Queens almost my whole life. I mean, I went to school at Queens College. I'm a music director. I've been a music director for years at churches in Queens, including the one Mary's Nativity Church in Flushing, where we'll be performing the concert on May 28th at 7 p.m. And so I can't get away from Queens. It keeps pulling me back, you know. So And I have had music played by the Queens Symphony Orchestra as well in the past. So I just keep coming back to Queens. So I have a big kind of footprint in Queens, I guess you could say. And the simple answer to the question, you know, what got me started is and what have, you know, I've been doing music my whole life because music is, you know, music's food for the soul. Art is food for the soul. And this is how, you know, I need to do music for the sake of my own self-expression. So I figured if I was going to do that, I might as well immerse myself in it. And what better way than to just do it professionally? So that's why that's why I do music, because I love to create. I love to composing is an opportunity to create. So is improvising. That's why I have a jazz quartet too, so I can improvise as a vehicle. Composing is a great vehicle. I feel with the orchestra, I really have a very great voice, and I'm very honored that Maestro Kim has been a champion of my music, and he regularly performs it, and and that's a great opportunity for me, and we get to share the music with other people, and it's a great thing. And does that answer the question? Okay.
Yes, of course it does.
Okay.
I just wanted to hear, you know, to get the whole idea of your background. Where would you say you got most of your music training? Do you think Queens College gave it to you, or prior to that?
The School of Life. That's important because what happens is when you're expressing yourself, it's not so much, I mean, when I'm expressing myself through music, it's not the sound of the music that's being expressed, but music is just the medium. There's something that more that has to be expressed. And when an artist expresses is their life experience. And the music, it's just coming through the music. It's like when you're writing, you're not, the words aren't what you're expressing. The words are the vehicle through which you express what needs to be expressed. And what needs to be expressed is your life experience, your view on life, your perspective, your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, your spirit, all these things, your whole inner world is what's being expressed. So that's where I learned, you know, you learn more about the art in living the art of life. And hopefully artists do have a life outside of their musical world, because that way they can, you know, tell the story of their life through their, you know, through their musical experience.
So how much advantage did you take of in terms of at Queens College? Because they do have great with their music programs, et cetera, et cetera. They have a big, you know.
Yes, they have a very good music program there. A matter of fact, a lot of members of the orchestra are affiliated with Queens College in one way or the other, either going there as students currently or graduating from there or having some kind of other affiliation from it. I know the maestro Kim also graduated from Queens College. And, it's a fine school. But, the school's good. I mean, any school is good, but any school only teaches you so much, no matter how good or bad the school is. You know, you really have to learn things on your own. And even when you're in school, it's the independent work you're doing. Just like in life, you know, you do have to, you have to take your own initiative, and it's what you put into it and how you interrelate with the world that determines your experience. And that experience is the best learning tool. And musically, I have, even before that and even after that, I've always been learning. So being in school for X amount of years, which wasn't that long of my musical existence, didn't really, I can't say that's made a large impact, because the learning was going on before that, and it's constantly going on, and it should, because in life we always should be learning, because that's the way we're growing.
Sure. How often do you, sit down and compose something?
That's a good question. Right.
I only ask good questions.
You do, bro. You ask the best questions. I should take you around all my concerts, and you could be my professional interviewer, because you ask
excellent
questions. But how often do I? That's a good question. Now, again, what I did make a distinction between composing and improvising, and really the two are related. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because, improvisation is the same as composing, except you got to get it right the first time. You can't go back and edit. You see, in life, we all try to be composers. We try to write it out. We make our plans, right? We plan. We have our plan for the day, for the week, for the year, our 5-year plan, our 10-year plan. We all have all these concepts of our plans. That's our compositions. But how often does life actually turn out like those compositions? Those plans are great. They give us a direction. But in reality, we improvise our way through our life. So it's very important to understand both aspects and how they interrelate. And when I compose, it always starts with an improvisation, and I spend much more time improvising than composing. But what happens is, so it's the same process, but, it's the same creative tools you're using, same creative muscles, same creative skills. But so when I have something I'm improvising that I think is maybe outstanding or outstanding little fragment that can be turned into a composition, I'll isolate that and take that, and then at some point it will become a composition. And I do have, I do have many compositions now which haven't even been orchestrated yet that will be orchestrated in the future, because orchestrating is another aspect. It's not like, a composer doesn't, or I think shouldn't, just go down and just start writing on a score paper. You should have, you should be able to, I always make sure my compositions are playable on the piano from beginning to end. I always make sure they work. They don't have to just sound good, they have to feel right. It's got to have a continuity to it. A good composition should feel like an improvisation. It should have the spontaneity and the flow of an improvisation. That's what all the great composers have, that Bach, Mozart, Chopin. They were all great improvisers, and you can hear this in their music. It just flows like a river. They're not laboring over each note. And a good improvisation should have the qualities of a composition, because an improvisation, should be well-structured, well-ordered, as much as you could do spontaneously. So the two are very related. So with me, in a sense, I'm always composing because I'm always improvising. But how much a very small percentage of that turns into actual compositions. But when they do, that's like the highest quality of those little improvisations I do. So that's the whole process of how it works with me, at least.
That's great. I guess that's with anybody who just sits down at the piano and. I guess you decide whether you're going to write it down or not also.
Exactly. No, a lot of people tell me when I play something and they say, what is that you played? I said, I'm just making that up. They're like, you should write that down. And I should and I could and it might sound okay, but there's a difference between something that sounds good and something that really is something that's a good theme that you can just expand into something greater. Because it's not about the music it's not about the sound of what it is. It's about you're telling a story. It's a narrative to music. So, you have to have an idea, a germ that will propel a narrative. And that's the key to identifying that. And, you know, I think I do a good job of recognizing that. When I play something that, you know, I think has good potential to be a narrative, I will repeat it over and over. I'll work with it. I'll analyze it. And then I'll, you know, try to take it to the next level. But, you know, that's, again, that's a small amount of the material. So it's very important to recognize those germs. You know, it's almost like in life. You got to recognize what are the most important things happening in your life and try to build on those. What are the really good things that are happening in your life? Build on those. Realize the really negative things that happen in your life and eliminate those. So, it's all about listening. You know, listening is different than hearing. You know, maestro might be able to hear the note out of tune, but listening is even a new level, where listening is where it goes beyond hearing. You're listening to not the sound of the note, but the message. What is that note saying? You know, and that's really important. And in life, you know, the best musicians are the best listeners. They hear what's going on, so they're able to blend with the other musicians, and they're able to, you know, take things to different levels because of that. Because they're able to communicate better through their listening skills. And in life, we have to tune in to what's going on around us. We have to listen to, you know, what's the music of our life. Every one of us has a song in our life. What's the music? What is our life telling us? We have to listen to it, tune in. A lot of times we try to dictate our life. And I find this in life and in music. I mean, a lot of composers, they really try to dictate what the music is going to do. I would rather not dictate it. I would rather follow where the music's taking me. If I improvise something, it's not so important what I want the music to do. What's important is, what does the music want to do? And I have to serve that. I have to follow the music. I have to listen to the music, not try to create it out of my own head, but try to just follow the flow of the music, the momentum, you know, and the current. I got to follow that current and see where it's going to take me. And to me, a good composition has that quality where, you know, it's not about me and my ideas and my ego. It's about the music itself. And I think the great composers have that quality. They have that egoless quality where they're just – and that's why it resonates with so many people, because it's not just about them. It's about humanity. It's about divinity. It's about, you know, spirituality. It's about everything. It's about the whole entire universe encapsulated into one little composition. And that's the quality that the great composers have. They try to take their ego out of the way as much as possible and follow the music. The music is playing the song of life, and they want to, and they're just kind of riding the. It's like surfing. You're riding the wave.
Do you find that you're going after the same genre all the time? That it's always like classical, or do you sometimes in your head get something that's jazzy or, you know, show tune type or things like that?
Well, that's a great question. Another great question. And the thing is, you know,
Let me pat myself on the back for that one. Go ahead.
You do that. If I was there, I'd pat your back for you. But so.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, you got me distracted with your back. What was the question?
The question was, in terms of genre, do you ever find yourself, you know, going into something like maybe jazz or movie,
right,
or
okay,
show tunes or something?
That's a great question. To me, you know, expression is expression. So when I'm making music, when I'm sitting down at the piano, it's just coming out. Now, what comes out, I think, most closely resembles classical music. Classical music is the vehicle for the music that comes out of me. So that's why it becomes classical music. And classical composers write all different styles. They write string quartets. They write, you know, quintets for woodwind. They write, you know, solo piano pieces, guitar pieces. You know, infinite amount of pieces they could write. But infinite amount of genres they could write within. But for me, I always gravitate to the orchestra, because I find that vehicle of orchestral classical music is the best vehicle to express the music I'm expressing. And so it just kind of naturally falls into that category. I improvise with a jazz quartet, so I'm always kind of in that genre too. But even when my jazz quartet plays, it's not like standard jazz style. It's more like, again, it's more like an expression of what I am, and it's an expression of it has a very classical influence because of that. I identify with classical music. I think, and that's why I think what what Maestro Kim and the orchestra are doing is so important, because they're bringing music to the Queens community. They're bringing great classical music. And the quality of the orchestra is so good. I mean, it's like, and the energy is so great, you feel like you're in Lincoln Center when you're in Flushing. And that is so important, because the classical music is such an amazing tradition. It's our roots as people. If we want to go back into our roots as individuals, we have classical music. We can go back. We can experience what, you know, people were experiencing 100, 200, 300, 400 years ago. And a different state of mind, a different state of mind where people weren't distracted by all this, you know, technology and stuff and Blog Talk Radio. No, I didn't mean that about Blog Talk Radio. But, you know, so, but what I mean is, you know, people were, in general, had more of a attention span. They were more focused about things. And, you know, and we could go back into our that state, go back into our roots and experience a time, and we can experience the best of that time. That, you know, the composers who we hear today are the best of that period, of those of that past period. That's the best of our roots. It's in our blood. It's our culture, our world culture, our experience. You know, that's the beauty of classical music. It's really, it's such amazing. It's such nutritious. It's the most nutritious food for the soul, I think you can take in as a Westerner. And that's why it's such an important thing. And that's why I think we need to, you know, try to promote that and get that to more people. People would, people who don't even think they like classical music, if they came to our concert on May 28th at 7 p.m. at Mary's Nativity, if they came to that concert, they would love it because they'd experience it live. You go to a concert, you sit up close next to a great orchestra playing great music, and you can't help but like it. You don't have to be a classical music fan. And that's what we need to do. That's why we need to try to get the word out there as much as possible. And that's why, Merle, I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate you having us on this program and talking to us about this. I appreciate, you know, you writing about it, because you're doing a service. You're bringing, you know, you're bringing the music to a wider audience. Maybe someone will hear this. Maybe someone will see your article and they'll come to the concert and they'll be, you know, they might be transformed. You never know the influence you can make on these people. So that's why we're doing it. And you know, I think that's part of the reason why you're doing what you're doing, because you're affecting people in a positive way.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but when I was growing up, when I was in elementary school, we kind of didn't have a choice. It was like music appreciation was kind of something that was taught anyway. I mean, he didn't, you know, just as part of it, just as, but I don't know if they do that in the schools anymore.
No, yeah. Certainly not as much. And Maestro might be able to tell you, the orchestra might be doing some, future work working with schools. Is that correct? Maestro, are you there?
Yeah, hello? Yeah.
Hi.
Sorry, I was checking my Facebook.
Okay. He was listening to the program on the radio, on Blog Talk
mm-hmm.
Radio.
That's right. Yeah, what's the question?
The question is, I know my monologues aren't that captivating. The question is, what is, we're talking about, Merle was talking about, you know, music is not as prevalent in the schools as they used to be in the past. You know, they don't teach, about music appreciation in the schools. But, you know, you're going to be doing, in the future, you're going to be working, your orchestra is going to be working with the schools. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So from September, we're going to set up in the, PSP, something like, it's Promise like Academy School. And like a young people's concert. So we're going to talk about music itself. What is music and then what is what, you know. So it's going to be like 5-6 times a year. So, you know, classical music, if you can enjoy it as much as you know. So if you want to really enjoy the music, you really have to study. So then me and our orchestra, we're going to provide that chance. Yeah,
so what is your background with music? When did you, where are you from, and, you know, how did this all begin?
Yeah, I'm from South Korea, not the North.
Well, make sure we say that, right?
I don't know. People just ask me, are you from North Korea? I don't know why. But anyway, so... I started to play the piano when I was 6, but I just quit in 6 months later because the teacher was my mother. And then, you know, usually the parents cannot teach kids. So So, and then I started to play the violin. Then I moved to New York, and I just got into King's College. And then I studied violin performance for my bachelor's degree. And then master's degree, I studied orchestral conducting. Yes.
And do you reside in Queens?
Yes, I live in Flushing.
Oh, okay. Oh, Flushing.
Flushing is the epicenter of cultural arts now that the Queen's Symphony
Orchestra
has come into being. And it's a great location because, you know, I mean, when you come to our concerts, first of all, it's easy to park, first of all, and it's a central part of Queens that a lot of people can get to. People can get there easy from the city. People can get there from Long Island and drive there. People around Queens can get there. And it really is. I mean, it's symbolically, the location is it's a cultural epicenter, despite the name Flushing, which isn't the most poetic name. I don't know whose idea it was to name a city Flushing, but, you know, I mean, a town Flushing, but you know, it is really I think the Queensboro Symphony Orchestra is helping to make it a great cultural mecca.
Well,
because
now with Town Hall presenting a lot of things, and also you have right across the street from Town Hall is the Taiwanese American Arts Council, and
yes.
So you have them in terms of art, and then a lot of associations with music, with the orchestras as well. So and then also the a company just formed the Queens Opera Theater.
Really?
That you're going to be using Town Hall. So it's really, it is a mecca.
Maestro Kim and the orchestra have collaborated with opera in the past, and they may even do that in the future. As a matter of fact, they may even get in contact with these people. You may even be able to get us all in contact together.
You want it?
Yeah.
Oh, I could definitely do that. I told them I would assist them on this.
Are you going to play the oboe or sing?
I don't think so. It's been too long. Actually, my main instrument is the piano. I mean, if you learn the piano, you could probably, you know, learn other instruments. Because in order to really learn the piano, you have to the music appreciation involved in it, knowing not just that you're putting your fingers on the keyboard, but then, you know, when you realize what the chords are and things like that, and then taking that and how it relates to another instrument. So, for instance, I was working at a place, and these people came over to me and said that they wanted to learn how to play the guitar. I said, well, I don't know how to play the guitar, but I could teach you. So what I did is I figured out how the guitar functions, what you need to do to get the notes. And I said, okay, so this is how it works, and so this is what you do. And if you're playing a chord, then this is what's going to make up a chord. So that's the kind of thing. Of course,
you should
have to admit.
Merle, you should have taught them the oboe instead.
No.
Yeah, actually, we need oboe.
Yeah, we need oboe players. That would help.
Yeah.
Next time someone's asking, just give them a little oboe instruction.
Well,
you know, I really want to say something. You know, that whoever listens to this radio, please, if you play the oboe, please contact me.
And how
I
would they contact
find,
you?
You know what? Do you know where you might be able to get somebody? Maybe somebody from students at Queens College that are majoring, that are music majors
in Queens College. I checked it.
He's tapped into that already.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible. Okay.
You know, we have three bassoons and the five French horns, three trumpets, and then everything is okay except oboe. It's not fair.
Not fair.
Wow. What did I, and I went to, I have to find out. Now I got a look back at what, I went to a concert, it was a string, no, it wasn't a string quartet. It was a quartet, and I'll have to go back to it, and I remember there was an oboe player.
Uh-huh.
I could, yeah, and I'll have to find out because I go to so many things that I have to kind of go back and look at the group that was playing. And they were playing in Queens. But I'll, okay. So let's see. So now I have to find that, and then I also have to hook you up with the
Oboe
the opera theater.
Yeah, opera theater.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have two assignments.
And speaking of Flushing Town Hall, you know, the orchestra has performed there in the past, and also they did a chamber music series there as well last summer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Oh, that's,
I forgot.
That's great. I can't believe, I still can't believe there's no oboe player at all of Queens College. What about, well, I don't know about
maybe we
what
should check
Queens
that Taiwanese.
Borough.
Maybe we should check. Maybe we should check that Taiwanese orchestra you mentioned.
Huh?
Yes, you know I'm going to. Yes, I'm going to get in touch with. As a matter of fact, tomorrow I have to go up to Connecticut to see an artist, and I'm going to talk with the woman who I guess she's. She's a curator, but I forgot what she. I think she's part. She's on the board of the Taiwanese American Art Council, and so I'm going to ask her because, yes, this is how I wound up going to different concerts all over the place, and it's also why I'm that much hooked on Chinese food at the moment.
I hear you. My answer, do you like Chinese food?
Oh, my God.
I do.
He does.
I have, sitting in my freezer, is because I was at one place on Grand Avenue, I guess, Broadway, in Elmhurst, and I bought a whole cooked duck. So I said, give it, and I have it all cut up in portions in my freezer. And people think it's funny because I love chicken feet. But only if it's made Chinese style.
I don't think I've ever experienced that. That doesn't fit into my vegetarian diet. I prefer when Dong Young takes me to the Korean restaurant and I eat kimchi there. I'm happy with that. Just give me some kimchi and I'm happy.
Well, wait a second. Just a minute. What happens is that Lucia Lee is the person I was talking about. Her husband is a vegetarian. So every time we go out to restaurants, we find all the stuff for him, all the things.
Yeah,
so
be careful
maybe,
of the vegetarians. Be careful of the vegetarians. They're like a cult.
Are they?
Huh?
Yeah, they'll try to abduct you.
When we've gone out, some things that have been prepared really taste good, you know, and I could say, I could eat this over, well, I'm not a hamburger person, so that's not a kind of thing, but I could eat this, you know, over having something, you know, that has meat in it. But anyway, to get back to the is there any recommendation for a Korean restaurant, by the way? Particular one?
Yes, but no.
He has to wait till he gets the advertising money first.
Yeah, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. If they donate money to the orchestra, then I'll tell.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see. Listen, if they do, you tell them that you have somebody who'll do an article on them.
Even better. Yeah. This is amazing publicity.
Yes. That's what that's what I'm here for.
Wait. What's the headline? Korean restaurant donates to great orchestra in Queens. Something like that?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's perfect.
Not quite. Kimchi for music.
I'm there. I like that.
I would.
Yes, you know, it's very interesting that people tend to think Korean. At any time people think of Korean food, it's already kimchi. It's like, you know, it's like somebody saying Jewish food is matzo ball soup.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So, okay, so either of you guys, like, have anything else you want to add?
Well, I just want to add that since we do have this concert on May 28th, the official debut of the Queensborough Symphony Choir doing Bruckner's Te Deum, that they also have plans in December. They're going to plan on doing Messiah, Handel's Messiah, so we're going to bring that to Queens. That's really exciting. People, residents in Queens will be able to get to experience that, extremely high-quality performance of that. And then New Year's concert, the maestro plans on doing a Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which is the choral symphony, which is with chorus and orchestra. It's a monumental piece. And is that all correct, Dong Young?
Yeah, that's right. But, Paul, is it possible to do the concert at 7:30?
Yeah, maybe. You see, we're working out logistics right now.
Yeah. Can you please?
7:30 New Year's Eve?
No. 7:30 May 28th.
Oh, it is 7:30, isn't it?
Yeah,
did I say 7
o'clock?
I need
time to eat something. Huh?
You said
7 o'clock. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yes, 7:30. Yeah, and our publicity says 7:30. It does say 7:30 on the website. So
yeah, and right on my.
That's my mistake.
Right on my computer, I have it right there. It says 7:30.
I agree.
So that's 7:30.
Yeah, I need time to eat.
I just wanted to share a little anecdote in regards to Handel's Messiah. That I wanted to do it while I was at Queens College, and I wanted to sing it. And so they had, when they had auditions, I went with one of my friends who, and I can't begin to tell you, if she sang the telephone book, it would be great. No matter what she sings, and she's still singing.
Oh.
And the two of us went there, but she doesn't read music. So we went to the audition, and the guy says to me, when I went over to the piano, he played one note. There was music there, and he said, "Now sing the next, like, you know, number of notes." And I went, and I just sang it because I was trained to do sight reading.
Mm. Okay.
She didn't make it because she didn't. Now, when it came to doing it, I thought to myself, well, just like chorus or glee club or whatever, I know, they'll play it and then I'll sing it. Once I hear it, and then I'll sing it. But it wasn't like that. They said, "Open up your book," and he just started playing, and I was expected to sing the alto part and just read it right then and there. I was freaking out.
How did you do?
I didn't do too well. There were certain parts. I can't sing those parts that are like, you know, 25 notes in one beat. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, one syllable, right.
Yeah.
That's called a melisma.
When you start trying to, yeah, I couldn't do that with my voice.
Yeah, melisma is very
difficult.
Melisma is very difficult, you know. They're so difficult. Actually, I went out with a girl named Melisma. It just didn't work out too well. They're very difficult.
But probably most of the other stuff I was able to do, but that was And I kept on thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to be so off with this poor chorus that all knows how to do it. And but I, you know, I got through it. Not sure I'll do it again. It was fun at the time.
Well, our audition for the Queensborough Symphony Choir is much less strenuous. I think you'll pass the audition.
Oh, okay. okay, so I'll get started in writing this up. The article, just so you know, will be in the Times Ledger.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have any other questions, I'll get in touch with you.
Beautiful.
And feel free to take this broadcast, which is live, and it's going to be archived, and you can use it.
We'll put it on the Queensborough Symphony Facebook page. What's that page, Maestro?
Do you think I remember that?
Well, you can find Queensborough Symphony.
We'll find it.
You can find it on Facebook. Very easy to find.
We'll find it. I'll post it. Okay.
Okay. Thank
and then
you
if
so
you
much.
Find any overplay, please let me know.
Yes.
Okay, you got it.
Yes.
Well,
thank you.
I gotta sign off because they just screamed out, telling me I got 60 seconds left.
Okay,
so,
Merle. Thank
guys,
you so much. This has been a joy. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you too.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so now I'm going to end this. I was going to play the thing, but... Everybody, have a great day, afternoon, evening, or whatever. I'll play the music.